Well, we were talking about the chemical control of the cell cycle when we paused last time. This is a little bit more, another example of this without the molecular detail. What we have here is human tissue that is being separated into cells, or small groups of cells at least, put into liquid suspension, and then plated out onto media. The medium is just the gel-like substance that the cells get plated on. And this blue bottle has what's called minimal medium, which means the medium includes just enough stuff to keep the cells alive, nothing else. And the cells remain alive. But that's it. They're not dividing. On the other hand, if you give it exactly the same medium as the blue, plus you give it PDGF, which stands for platelet-derived growth factor, then not only do the cells remain alive, they are spurred into going through cell division. They proliferate, in other words, which means to increase in numbers. And so this is another example of a factor. Remember last time I said that we use that term factor to describe a lot of different things. Usually they're proteins, but it's some substance that causes things to happen that wouldn't without it. Well, platelet-derived growth factor is called that because we discovered it in platelets, but platelets, part of the blood, are not the only thing that contains it. It's just still always called that because of the discovery. It is one example of a growth factor. There are several different growth factors, but they cause growth, which involves cell division, and that's why these cells are proliferating. Similarly, in 17, we have chemical control of cell cycle using another example. In this case, the cells from this tissue exhibit what is called anchorage dependence. So what that refers to is that these cells will not be spurred on to dividing, to proliferate in other words, unless they are stuck to a surface. They have to be anchored like they are in the body. And when they sense that, they will start to go through their cell cycle, create new cells, and you see that in the second picture. But it's not just anchorage dependence that's controlling the cell cycle here. That's a stimulatory control. It causes cell division, but there's also density-dependent inhibition, which doesn't stimulate it. It inhibits it, as the name inhibition implies. What that refers to is that once these cells have split to create enough cells that the space between the cells is now full, in other words, all the cells are crowded up against each other, they feel each other, then they stop dividing. Exactly as skin, for instance, should if it's healing, right? If you injure skin, you're leaving a hole. And the surviving cells will fill that hole, but only, I mean, they'll create new cells only enough to fill the hole. They won't keep doing that because of density-dependent inhibition. And notice that you can, in this experimental example, take out some skin cells. That's like another injury, and they will fill the hole again, but only until it's full. That's how normal cells work. Cancer is shown on the right, though. And cancer is a genetic disorder, which simply means that it's a disorder of DNA. Something goes wrong with DNA. DNA, genes are made of DNA, and so a genetic disorder involves DNA. Now, saying that cancer is a genetic disorder does not mean that it's heritable. DNA is involved in heredity as well, but cancer involves something happening to the DNA within that individual's lifetime. It can be by damage from whatever, smoking, exposure to certain chemicals, radiation. There's all kinds of things that can cause changes to DNA. And sometimes it happens just randomly. Well, whenever there is a change to DNA, to the sequence of DNA, that's a mutation. And mutations occur randomly throughout an individual's lifetime. Sometimes they occur within genes, because not all the DNA, as we'll see, is in genes. There's a bunch of DNA between genes. But anyway, if a randomly occurring mutation occurs in a gene, it's going to affect what that gene does. The gene is a code for how to make a particular type of RNA. So a mutant gene is going to code for a mutant form of RNA. The RNA is going to be different. And if that then goes on to translation, which uses the code in the RNA to make a protein, that means the protein is also going to be different. It's going to be a mutant version of a protein. Mutations cause this all the time. And there's all kinds of different proteins, thousands of different kinds of proteins in humans, for instance, that do different things. So any one of those can be affected by a mutation in the corresponding gene for that protein. Some of those proteins, though, are these ones that are involved in the control of the cell cycle that we've been talking about in the last few slides. And if a mutation occurs in the gene coding for how to make one of those proteins, then the cell can lose control of the cell cycle. And that's what cancer is. It's loss of control of the cell cycle. So what we see here is that what is specifically lost is the ability for these cells to stop. In other words, the loss of density-dependent inhibition. They no longer realize they should stop as soon as the hole is filled, stop dividing. So they keep dividing, and that leads to a tumor. That's what a tumor is, a buildup of cells that are dividing out of control. Now that happens in a single cell originally. One cell has something go wrong with its DNA. One cell mutates. And the bad thing about this is that, from a cancer viewpoint, is that the cell doesn't have any idea that its DNA is wrong. That DNA is going to be used just like DNA would in any normal cell. In other words, it's going to be transcribed. Yes, it will be transcribed, but when it comes time for the cell cycle to split that cell into two, it's to prepare for that, as we've been talking about, it's going to copy its genome, an exact copy. So that one defective cell becomes two cells that are both defective for the same reason. The perfect copy of the DNA makes two defective cells now, each of which think they should keep splitting. And so every cell that gets created by that original first cancerous cell is also cancerous. Now, we see an example of cancer starting out in a breast in 18, but it could be anywhere in the body, of course. An individual, that original cancerous cell, is undetectable. It's a microscopically small cell. And it's not doing anything harmful when it's a single cell. And as a matter of fact, you have to have many, many millions of cells for it to even be a detectable tumor. And even that is not necessarily doing anything bad. But this is why early detection is so important, because if you can detect it, then you can hopefully eliminate that entire tumor, either kill all the cells or completely remove them. But once the tumor gets big enough, the first thing that's going to happen is that that tumor is just going to interfere with all the healthy cells around it doing their job. It's going to prevent the healthy cells from doing their job efficiently. But even worse is that just randomly one or a small number of cells that are in this tumor, wherever it is, can break off from that tumor, get carried by the blood or the lymph, which move throughout the body, take up residence in some other organ and then start a brand new tumor. I mean, it's still cells that are cancerous, so they'll start a tumor wherever they land. And that's called metastasis, the spread of cancer to other organs. And when cancer gets metastatic, then it becomes much more difficult to control, because the key is you have to get every cancerous cell in order for it to be cured. That becomes much more difficult when there's many tumors. But it also is doubly bad because tumors throughout the body are going to cause problems in multiple different systems, and the body's going to fail to maintain homeostasis. That usually leads to death. That's the end of that chapter.